At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
Listen to Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown. Good morning. It is Tuesday, the 29th of September. Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's discussion program with a panel of invited guests talking about the issues of the day with you for the next hour and 55 minutes or so. If you want to get involved and get your viewpoint across with us today, these are the following numbers and ways to get in contact with us.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Going to be joined in the studio by John Harper. We're going to have Alf Brewer on the phone as well. And we're also going to be speaking in about 5 minutes or so with Peter Pitts. He is the president of the Center for Medicine in the Public Interest and a former FDA associate commissioner. But first of all, let's have a look at what's making the front pages in the UK and Spain. The newspaper headlines: Tory rebels virus revolt amid deadly chaos is their headline. So let's look at what the papers are saying and what the front pages are saying in the UK and Spain. Under the headline deadly chaos, the Daily Mirror says millions of Britons have been left baffled by the latest coronavirus measures, a muddle of utterly confusing laws, rules and guidelines, and all the while the virus is spreading amongst us. The paper says it is no wonder that public compliance is failing when no evidence is produced to justify pubs and restaurants having to close at 10 o'clock in the UK. It's a view shared by the Daily Telegraph, which says the curfew is failing in its objective of keeping people apart and slowing the growth of the virus. In the editorial pages, the paper says it's exasperating for many of Boris Johnson's supporters that there is no sign the government is about to change course. Time to axe the 10 p.m. curfew is the headline in the Daily Mail, which says the pressure is growing to ditch a policy that simply forces crowds onto the streets. Police, scientists and politicians have joined forces to call for Mr. Johnson to rethink it, the paper says. He reports that only 3% of coronavirus outbreaks investigated by Public Health England were due to people gathering in bars and restaurants. The Sun says it wouldn't mind so much if there was solid evidence that the curfew and other draconian curbs were cutting infections. It said what these freedom-destroying edicts do most successfully is induce panic, seen in the idiotic stripping of loo roll from supermarket shelves. Mr. Johnson is facing a red wall revolt by Conservative MPs in traditional Labour constituencies over the latest measures, according to the Daily Mail. It says with 16 million Britons now under draconian restrictions, his own MPs are calling it a national lockdown by default. Even if the government deplacates its backbenchers in the short term, it is unlikely to quell broader anxiety about its coronavirus strategy, according to The Spectator. Magazine detects growing unease about the direction in which ministers are going with lockdowns. It says usually supportive MPs have made it clear the government needs to subject itself to more scrutiny if it is to maintain the backing of its MPs. The Times says Tory backbenchers have accused the Prime Minister of ruling by decree, with the creation of new coronavirus offences prompting comparisons, but of course, with George Orwell's dystopian novel 1984. It also is calling for an overhaul of government structures to improve long-term decision-making for the duration of the pandemic, including the appointment of a minister with specific responsibility for test and trace. The Times leading article says the government keeps getting caught out by problems that ought to have been foreseeable. A test and trace minister, it argues, could mobilise resources across departments and ensure that sufficient testing capacity is made available where and when it is needed. Affluent millennials and holidaymakers are driving the second wave of coronavirus infections, according to the latest data reported in the Daily Telegraph. The analysis by the Office of National Statistics found cases were rising fastest among wealthy under 35s, whose infection rate has more than quadrupled since the end of July. The paper says the figures suggest the introduction of the so-called rule of six may do little to stop the spread of the virus. The paper leads with the shortage of flu vaccine across parts of the UK, raising fears that pensioners may face delays in getting the jab this winter. It says the shortfall leaves swathes of the most vulnerable with no immediate prospect of a jab, despite a government promise that it would be at the front of the queue. The Guardian is one of the papers to carry a photograph of Sue Bushby and her late partner, Matt Ratner, the police officer who was killed in a custody suite in South London, who she described yesterday as a gentle giant. On its front page, The Sun carries a photograph of the suspected gunman, Luis de Sousa, taken some years ago as he posed with a five-foot medieval sword. There are signs that European negotiators are inching closer to agreeing a trade deal with the UK, according to the Times. It says Brussels is understood to have dropped its demand for the two sides to reach a broad agreement on all the outstanding areas of dispute, and negotiators have indicated that they are prepared to press ahead with writing the joint legal text of a deal. Many US papers have been considering how the revelations about Donald Trump's tax returns might affect the forthcoming presidential election. The Los Angeles Times is of the view that they won't have a huge impact on a race that has remained remarkably stable despite numerous developments that might have altered it. A worldwide pandemic, a recession, wildfires consuming the West, and widespread protests for racial justice. The paper says that the revelations may not dampen enthusiasm for Trump among his most ardent supporters, who have brushed off outrage after outrage for years. Nearly three-quarters of U.S. voters plan to watch the first debate between the presidential rivals Donald Trump and Joe Biden tomorrow, according to a poll reported in the Washington Post. The paper says that up to 11% of the electorate are now either still unsure of how they will vote or might yet switch sides, suggesting the debates could play a pivotal role in the election. And finally, The Times is under a number of papers to report that Britain is facing another diplomatic row over the return of a cultural treasure. This time, though, it's not a dispute over the Elgin Marbles, but a fossilised shark's tooth, which was given to Prince George last week by Sir David Attenborough, who came across the fossil on a holiday in Malta in the 1960s. Under Maltese law, fossils are considered objects of cultural heritage, and the country's culture minister now wants to see its return. Looking at the front page of the webpage of El País in English, it asks the questions, why has Spain failed to contain the coronavirus pandemic? And also that Spain has reported 31,785 new coronavirus cases from Friday to Monday with 179 victims. Health Minister Salvador Illa confirmed there is a community transmission in Madrid, which continues to be the worst hit Spanish region. And the Spanish Supreme Court has barred the Catalan Premier from public office for disobedience. That story says that Quim Torra has been barred for disobedience, and means that Torra will have to step down as premier, paving the way for a fresh institutional crisis in Catalonia. The Catalan High Court, which first found the Catalan premier guilty of the accusations, has already begun the process to execute the sentence and has notified Torra's attorney the politician is barred from office from today onwards. The court in December found found that Torra, who's a hardline supporter of Catalan independence, was guilty of disobedience for failing to remove banners supporting jailed separatist leaders from public buildings during campaigns ahead of election. The Premier was ordered to take down the signs by Spain's National Electoral Board, which argued they violated rules on managing neutrality during election campaigns. I just want to go back to that main story as well about the new coronavirus cases Monday to Friday. And what that actually says, looking at that one, the latest report from the health ministry about the crisis, which was released yesterday morning, shows 13,449 new cases detected in Madrid since Friday. This is the biggest growth of the second wave, said the health minister, Salvador Illa, who appeared before reporters last night, accompanied by Fernando Simón, the director of the health ministry's coordinated center for health alerts. That means that if you look at the same figure, which was released last Monday, that was 11,991. And 4 weeks ago, the figure was 9,440. There is community transmission in Madrid and the pandemic is not under control, said Elia, referring to a situation whereby new infections cannot be tracked and traced. We need to act, he said. New cases registered in Madrid represent 42%. Of the total 31,785 registered in the ministry report since Friday. The percentage has grown compared to last week when it came in at 38%. The total number of cases on a national level, meanwhile, continues to grow compared with other Mondays when the cases registered over the weekend are accumulated. September 28th saw the biggest growth so far of the second wave. 4 weeks ago, 26,000 new cases were notified, 5,000 fewer than Monday. Spain also registered the highest number of new coronavirus-related deaths recorded between Friday and Monday in the second wave, according to the ministry report, with 179 fatalities. The official COVID death toll in Spain now stands at 31,411, although this number does not include the tens of thousands of victims who were not subject to a PCR test during the first wave. Back to the front pages in the UK. Looking at what they are saying today, looking at your front pages, and they are as follows. Daily Mail, MPs vent anger as ministers announce fresh ban on seeing family and friends. Red wall revolt over new curb on freedoms. The Daily Mirror, deadly chaos, curfews doing more harm than good. Students trapped in halls, local lockdowns, a muddle of utterly confusing laws, rules and guidelines. And all the while the virus spreads among us. The Eye, new good COVID offences fuel Tory rebellion. The Times is Tories lash out against Big Brother COVID fines. Daily Express, peace deal to head off rebels virus revolt. The Guardian, global deal to roll out snap COVID tests worldwide. That's a test that can accurately diagnose coronavirus in 15 to 20, 30 minutes, about to be rolled out across the world, and it'll be sold to low and middle class countries for $5 each. The Metro, carry on campus, no food, loo roll or lectures and Christmas may be called off amid councils chaos at universities. Daily Telegraph, elderly face winter flu vaccine shortage. Financial Times, they lead, well, the picture with schools out, COVID curbs hit students, and also the Daily Star, ear we blow, battered by the famous five. That is the UK set to take a battering from five name storms, which it dubs the famous five this winter. And those are your headlines in the UK, the US, Spain, and around the world. This Tuesday, the 29th, excuse me, of September.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Giles Brown live from the studios of TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. Now, yesterday, I spoke with Peter Pitts, who is a former FDA Associate Commissioner, President for the Centre of Medicine for Public Interest. Here's what he had to say on the current situation in this hunt for a vaccine for COVID. You're listening to Giles Brown on TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. Operation Warp Speed. Is it a bad vaccine? Should we be trialing these vaccines as the COVID epidemic, the pandemic increases? Are the outcomes going to be useful to us? Where are we in our struggle against this unprecedented situation? I'm joined live on the line from the United States by former FDA Associate Commissioner Peter Pitts. Peter, good morning to you.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be on your show.
Just explain to me a little bit where we are at the current time in looking at finding a vaccine against the virus.
Yeah, we're at a very important inflection point. In the U.S., there are four programs that are being supported by Operation Warp Speed by the U.S. government that are in late phase three trials. Late phase three trials are large-scale healthy human volunteer studies. And from what I understand, by the end of October, we should have information on the majority of these development programs to see whether the data is positive enough and robust enough for those companies to then go forward and submit their data for FDA review. So again, I think that we'll have one or more vaccines approved by the FDA by early 2021, first quarter. And even before then, through an emergency use authorization, which can the FDA can give to a vaccine prior to actual full review, there might be a emergency use authorization for those high-risk individuals who need a vaccine sooner than others. So I think we're heading in the right direction, and I have tremendous faith, if not in the political process, then certainly in the FDA process.
A lot of people are saying this is happening too quickly. How come we are talking about maybe having a vaccine ready in 6 months, and yet we still haven't got vaccines for things like the common cold, for example?
You know, generally speaking, it can take 6 to 10 years to develop a new vaccine. These vaccines are developed truly at warp speed. And the reason that we've been able to get that done are a couple of reasons. Firstly, we're dealing with much more advanced virus development and manufacturing science. So that's the good news. It's an important confluence of events happening at a very important time. Secondly, you have an unprecedented working alliance between government, the biopharmaceutical industry, and academia. Everybody's got their eye on the prize, and that prize is obviously a vaccine for the COVID-19 virus. You know, and lastly, everybody's putting their time, talent, and treasure to bear on one issue. Now, when that happens, really amazing things can happen. But I think that the variable that really isn't getting enough attention is this ecosystem collegiality on the one hand, and the advanced science that's being used, not just on the discovery end, but also on the manufacturing front, both very important.
Yeah, you've been somewhat of an advocate, I've seen in previous interviews, about linking up, you know, 21st century science and really pushing ahead with this.
Yeah, very important. Again, and not just for vaccines, but also for therapeutics. I think one of the great victories, certainly in the United States, that really is not getting a lot of attention and should, is that early in the pandemic, as with elsewhere around the world, we had tens of thousands of casualties. It's a tragedy that people will never be gotten back. But what we've been able to do since then, because of science and because of regulatory science, is develop therapeutics that keeps the most at-risk population, the elderly, people with respiratory conditions and other serious underlying healthcare conditions, alive, so that when they do contract the virus, they can see it through at home or in hospital through to the end, and then go home and be healthy and begin their lives. So even in some of the states where, unfortunately, the infection rates are spiking, as they are now also again in Europe, the death rates are remaining very low and flat. So that's a huge public health victory that requires, you know, some attention, because we are doing some things right.
And is there a need for all the agencies who are working on this then to come together, so we're not just getting random data from different parts of the country, the regions, or even the world?
I think that's one of the shortcomings, not just of the U.S., but of the global response to the pandemic, which is we have lots of data, but we're not coordinating it and looking at it, you know, as a totality. That's a mistake. On the other hand, the only thing that's worse than no data is bad data. So we have to be careful of making sure that we get better tests that give us results more accurately. And I think as time progresses in the near future, we'll have better tests that give us responses quicker. And that's going to be another for us, not just to mitigate the virus, but to contain it and ultimately have it completely under control.
It wasn't a randomized controlled trial, but it was a study of 35,000 patients. Was that what we were talking about a little bit earlier?
Well, there are different studies. You know, the studies for vaccine phase three, which are in the tens of thousands, are in fact double blind randomized trials where, you know, half of the voluntary population gets a vaccine and half does not. We're looking at data that has not been collected in a randomized way, more in a real world way. and certainly been on the hydroxychloroquine debate, convalescent plasma, where, you know, a lot of these treatments, which don't have global regulatory approval or really solid science review, shows some real-time benefit. So I think we're beginning to understand that we need to do things on a parallel track, where on the one hand, we want to have solid gold standard randomized controlled data so we understand things for the long term. But we also can't simply ignore that these treatments are being used right now to greater or lesser degrees of success. We need to look at that data as well so we can help save people's lives in real time. And what's interesting is the first time that the biopharmaceutical industry and the FDA kind of thought about this parallel tracking concept was in the 1980s relative to HIV/AIDS, where the new treatments needed to be run through the FDA process appropriately with robust science, but also needed to be used concurrently to save lives. Now, what's interesting in the U.S., the public official that drove that parallel track theory was none other than Anthony Fauci. So I think that we've got people in the U.S. working on this project to understand the need for robust science, but also understand the need for flexibility and how science can lead us.
When, I mean, you say that it, because there was a, was if I remember correctly, there was something of an outcry, wasn't there, because of the speed that the vaccines or the treatments to prolong the life of those suffering with HIV were actually brought into the market. Do you think we might be at the same sort of point then with the vaccine development for treating COVID?
I think we're actually at a better point because, you know, in the early days of HIV/AIDS, we didn't really understand the disease, the mechanisms of the disease, or really how to treat it. We were in the dark. When it comes to viruses, we have a much broader understanding of how viruses work and even how the wily COVID-19 virus operates. And also that is combined with our ability to look at our history of vaccine development and manufacturing, and also, and not unimportantly, public education campaigns to make sure people get vaccinated, because having a vaccine that works and is safe and effective that nobody uses is in no way a public health victory.
That was going to be my next question, because you're president of the Center of Medicine in the Public Interest. If you like, this particular pandemic hits it as an unprecedented time, because people have access to all sorts of information services, be it via social media, by the internet, be it by their phones and whatever. And there are some interesting theories, and I use those words advisedly, floating around out there. You know, how do you talk to people and say, I mean, there has been a growing anti-vaxxer movement worldwide. Maybe the problem you're going to have at the moment is people are saying, oh, well, I do my research, and when in fact they're just following a few YouTube videos.
Well, you know, as the late Senator Daniel Moynihan said, that everybody's entitled to their own opinions, but not to their own facts. You know, I think in the U.S., there are three tranches of people that need to be educated. First are communities of color that have a historic skepticism and lack of trust relative to government health care programs. And a lot of that skepticism is well-founded. And I believe that a government education campaign needs to address those concerns with respect and aggressively, because that's the same community that has a higher rate of infection. So you don't want the group that has the highest rate of infection also to have the highest rate of doubt as to whether they want to get vaccinated. That's important. Then you have a second group, which is actually larger, which are Americans that really don't understand the value of vaccines. You know, it's been a generation or two since we've solved polio, for example. People don't pay attention to it, but they need to, because, you know, this is a teaching moment for the American population, not just relative to the value of a COVID-19 vaccine, but to the value of vaccines writ large. And that's especially important now as we're entering into flu season in the U.S. And then you have the third group of people who are, as you mentioned, the kind of Andrew Wakefield anti-vax populations. And I think right now, unfortunately, those people are a lost cause. They are a danger to themselves and our community. But I think right now we have so many other higher priorities that bang our head against the wall with these Luddites, really is not the most effective use of public time or public education.
One of the things that I mentioned this before, but it is the speed. Can you be sure that a vaccine that comes through at Operation Warp Speed isn't going to have any? I mean, a vaccine will always have side effects on certain people. That's inevitable. But you know, can we be sure that a vaccine that comes through during Operation Warp Speed will be safe? Will go through all the checks?
I can say that my belief is absolutely yes. The U.S. FDA is a non-political organization. It has the fewest political appointees of any agency in the U.S. government, and that every single employee who is looking at and reviewing therapeutics and vaccines is, from top to bottom, a career public health employee. So a loud, robust positive, yes, those vaccines can be trusted. But to your point, you know, there's a difference between expediting and rushing. When you rush, you make mistakes and you cut corners, and that's not allowed. When you expedite, you make sure that your top priority gets all the resources it needs to make it happen. I believe that the FDA reviews of these vaccine programs will be as robust as they ever have been and will tell us important things. For example, which vaccine might be best for children, which vaccine might be best for elderly or other at-risk populations. But I have complete confidence in the FDA process.
Excuse me if I come over in layman's terms here, and perhaps it isn't your area of expertise, but even if we do get a vaccine, will there be enough manufacturing capability able to get a vaccine out to the population, to the people or the communities that need it?
I believe that they will be. I mean, early on in the discussion of Operation Warp Speed, you know, all the participants recognized that development of a vaccine is only part one, that the manufacturing and the logistics is equally important. And right now, what a lot of the companies who are in late phase two development are doing is what's called manufacturing at risk. And that means that even before the vaccines are reviewed and approved, manufacturing tens and hundreds of millions of doses, with the expectation that if they are approved, they will be able to get out there quicker and vaccinate the at-risk population first and then everybody else. And I think that's also true on a global perspective. So I'm very optimistic about the supply being there, the logistics being there to get the vaccines to where they're needed. And I think we need a campaign both in the U.S. and around the world for a 100% vaccination goal. That's going to be tough to do, but I think that's what we need to do to win this battle.
As I said before, you're president of the Center of Medicine in the Public Interest. You're a former FDA Associate Commissioner. You were named in Modern Healthcare magazine as one of the 300 most powerful people in American healthcare. Obviously, you speak to other healthcare professionals. They are presumably of the same opinion.
Yes, I think that when you take the politics out of it, everybody is saying the same thing. I mean, I'm saying that we'll probably have a vaccine for broad general use in early 2021. I hope I'm wrong. I hope it's sooner. I'm going to be pragmatic. But I look at the numbers and I recognize that, you know, we still have to collect a lot of data. The data needs to be reviewed by the FDA and its outside advisory committee of experts and then make their decision. So I'm comfortable with an early 2021 date. And I think most healthcare experts recognize the independence of the FDA and that the politics, while gathering the majority of the media attention, really is a sideshow. It's an unfortunate sideshow, and it's there, but I don't think it's going to slow down the appropriate development, review, and approval of these vaccines.
You talked a little bit earlier about polio. You also could also talk about measles, and there was an upsurge in measles even before this happened. But it's safe to say, perhaps, with all the smoke and mirror and sound and fury, there's politics involved in that. There's, as I said before, there are public demonstrations taking place around the world. There has never been, perhaps, a more challenging case for the medical industry to develop a vaccine on a more challenging situation than this one?
I agree with that. This has been, you know, one of the toughest public health situations I've ever seen. Obviously, you know, every country has faced its own crises. We've had other virus pandemics in the past. But I think at the end of the day, what sets us apart beyond the wily nature biologically of the virus is that it's happening in real time all around the world over the internet, which is both a good thing and a bad thing. And I believe that one thing that government needs to do all around the world, not just in the U.S., is harness the power of social media to educate people relative to the value of vaccines and the politics-free review process of most global regulatory agencies. I think that we can either lead, follow, or get out of the way. And getting out of the way is not an option. I believe leading is the way to go. That's why politicians are elected to lead, and they should let their public health officials do the talking.
If people want to find out more information about where we're going with this, and they want to find out about, because I know you've been interviewed about this before and you've written about this, is there a website? Where can people find your thoughts and the latest information on where we are?
Oh, thank you for asking. Our website for the Center for Medicine and the Public Interest is cmpi.org. Lots of articles, media interviews, radio and television, opinion pieces, interviews with other people. And I invite your listeners to have a look and reach their own decisions.
Well, as I said before, it's an unprecedented time in the full glare of social and all sorts of media. Peter Pitts, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was an interview that I did yesterday with Peter Pitts, a former FDA Associate Commissioner, President of the Center for Medicine in the Public Interest.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000.
Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And we're back live in the studio. Me, Giles Brown, with The Viewpoint. 952 78 4000 is the phone number. studio@tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. And you can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. Joined in the studio, which seems like a rare occurrence, by John Harper. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. And on down on the phone line is Alf Brewer. Good morning to you, Alf.
Good morning, Giles. Good morning, John. Long time no here.
Oh, yeah. Indeed, Ralph. I've been missing you. Getting withdrawal symptoms, mate.
No, don't talk about withdrawals.
I think we've all been getting withdrawal symptoms from each other. But it's nice to be sort of half safe and back again. I was just speaking to Peter Pitts, who was with the FDA, and we've got some. Yes, good morning to Richard in London as well. He is ecstatically happy that the the broad church is here today, and that's an interesting item of headwear you're wearing, Richard. Jason's been on saying you cannot claim it is a 100% safe. These are vaccines, obviously. When in the midterm time span, it has been cut for speed. Nobody is psychic. Nobody is psychic. So you know there will be no side effects in years to come. How do you know that? Says Jason. It's Peter Pitt, by the way, not Peter Pott, thank you. So which would be a strange name for somebody with the drug in front of the FDA. But anyway, let's have some thoughts then on where we are. Let's kick off with vaccines, the virus, COVID. I'll start with John, as he's sitting across from me, Alf, and then come to you.
Oh, okay. So we're starting with me. I think the vaccines would be a lot more enticing if they took away the immunity to the vaccine manufacturers and made them liable for any long-term effects. It might actually slow the process down of testing it a little bit. And secondly, I think obviously all of our governmental people and scientists should actually be the first people to take the vaccine, and then we should actually watch just for a couple of weeks just to see how many of them had sort of strange behaviour in Parliament or in their desks or in the street, because there have already been two cases in this vaccine where they had what they called neurological problems, which were not related to the vaccine, of course. So, you know, my view on vaccines, I personally will never have one. I don't see the need for it. And I think that I've avoided vaccines since my TB shot when I was 11. And, up since then, it's gone into a grey area. After 1989, there were all sorts of problems came up, because in 1989, they gave the immunity to the vaccine manufacturers. And I just don't want to take a product where I'm left with trying to sue the government for compensation, especially when the government paid out, I think it was $184 million in compensation over the last few years for vaccinated people. No, to me, not for me.
Not for you. An interesting, a bit of strange behaviour for MPs behind their desks, Alf. That's part of the course, surely.
Yeah, well, John is always going to be provocative. Listen, the governments collectively around the world, either through the WHO or independently, went to the manufacturers and the governments and whoever it is, the health authorities, have set the risk levels. You can't then expect a company to work within the risk levels that have been set for them, that they've then got to pay compensation should something go wrong. The risk levels are set by the government. They're still being tested. The governments will still pass them for use in their countries. This isn't like something being imposed. And as for, I was quite taken with Peter Pitt, because, again, you know, very provocative words, and John's quite right. You know, I've never had a flu vaccine. I had no intention of ever having a flu vaccine. It's not a vaccine anyway. It just gives you the flu. And what he said was, we need to see a program worldwide of 100% vaccination. Now, that's imposition.
Absolutely.
And like John, I'm quite clear. If I want to choose to have the vaccination, that's my choice. If somebody believes that I'm endangering the lives of, you know, however billion people there are on the planet, well, that's tough. You know, I have my rights. I will defend my rights. So, you know, like John, the vaccine is an issue. It's different. The other thing, you know, that was said, that people don't... I'm not sure people do understand everything that's said scientifically. He never said... he spoke about a vaccine for children and a vaccine for old people and a vaccine, which is what they found with the AIDS stuff as well. It has to be targeted an audience. What he said was, I'm sure that by whenever it was, October or sometime, there will be a vaccine for general use. A vaccine for general use, as I understand it, is medication that is better for people to recover from getting the virus, not something that's going to stop people getting the virus. Also, I was listening to one of the UK, whatever they're called, epidemiologists, and she said quite clearly, and I know this from experience, because all my daughters and grandchildren have all returned to school, where they work and teach and learn, and they were given tests, and they were surprised that they could only get results that went back 3 months. Now, my daughter is convinced that she had this virus back in end of February, early March, because she lost her taste, she lost her sense of smell, she had headaches, she had all sorts of things. They never said then, oh, you've got this virus, because they didn't really know. It was before lockdown and all that. They can't tell her whether she's got it. And this woman spelled it out quite clearly. You can have the antibodies in your body, but they start to run out after 3 months. So you might have had it 6 months ago. She also said quite clearly, because it's such a short span, they don't know about the reinfection rates. Because they didn't do all the testing at the beginning when it first happened in many, many countries, including Spain, big time. They didn't have the facilities. And they don't know about the reinfection rate. What I have heard, you know, listening to all the specialists, they're all saying there is no guarantee that you can't be reinfected. So, you know, I think... You know, they should be concentrated on two things, the testing and tracking, which they are, you know, abysmally bad all over the show, including the UK more than most, because they've got the economy that they could have done it. And now, because they couldn't do that, I very rarely agreed with John on the radio, but be fair, they're now trying to blame the population. It's your fault for going out and partying. Oh, didn't you give us vouchers to go out and have a cheap meal? No, it's just what they're doing and saying is just junk. And I'm really, really unbelievable. And the one thing I did agree with Peter Pitt is that the anti-vaccine people, because there will come a time when maybe something is found that is safe and can be used, you know, in general, you know, population terms, is that they're a danger to themselves. Again, this is the scientific medical people imposing on others their view. And it is only a view, as we keep saying on Viewpoint. You're entitled to your opinion, but you don't then say, and everybody else has got to agree with me. So he said a couple of things that I'd go, yeah, very interesting, the scientific information, but you ain't going to vaccinate me unless I agree. And I don't think I'm endangering myself if I'm anti-vaccine, because like John, I want to see a vaccine that's developed that they absolutely can be, you know, as much as they can be certain, there are no side effects, there are no long-term dangers to it, etc., etc.
And we've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles Brown. I'm calling from Mafferon. Welcome back, Alf and John. A semblance of normality in most serious times. Good morning, gents.
Morning.
Yeah, hi.
How are you doing? Are you all right?
Yeah, fine.
I've got a funny echo on the phone. Is it coming through okay at your end?
Yeah, you're fine. You're fine, Jason. Just viewpoint away, please.
Okay, Giles. This vaccine. I remember a different thing, but I remember that scientists don't know everything and the errors made with the thalidomide children years ago. I know it wasn't a vaccine, but it shows that scientists are not always getting it right. And when you're gambling with a 7 billion population and talking about forcing people to take it, you could make a serious error of judgment on a species level. That's the first point. Second point, there was an elderly politician speaking with absolute articulation and common sense, saying that the virus is second on the list of all the things that can kill us. And in fact, that the reaction is over proportionate, which I agree with. Do we really want to spend the rest of our lives living in fear like this? Because the problem is, apart from the psychological effects, the very draconian, very totalitarian way, especially the UK is going, the George Orwell scenario that's been bandied about is not far from the truth. So the price I'm paying is worse than the problem. And it's really, really scary. I think people are starting to wake up. That the news is starting to tighten around everybody's neck in a way that it's becoming almost totalitarian control. And the alarm bells should be ringing about now in everybody's head, not just in Britain, but on a global scale. Does it concern the panel, the way we're going in terms of loss of liberty and this road that we're embarking upon?
Thank you for that, Jason. Does it concern the panel, this road we're embarking on, John?
Well, anybody that's heard me at all on TRE knows that actually since this started, I've been saying exactly what's happening now, what's going to happen. So, thank you. The conspiracy theorist becomes a conspiracy fact as we see it happening around the world. I think it's very obvious that the world's dividing into two types of people: those who want their lives controlled by somebody else and feel safer having it that way, prefer to actually rely on big government and the globalists to actually run their lives and keep everything tickety-boo, and people who don't, and people who are sovereign individuals, that's words you'll often hear from me, people who actually want to actually get on with their life with the minimum of interference possible within the constraints of the law. One of the things about this current lot of things is that none of them are actually laws. You see, because although he's got an 80-seat majority, he hasn't actually taken the time to sit down and clearly say, this is what we're laying out, and we want a government approval for this, which he should easily be able to get. But these are statutes, and statutes are not the same thing as laws. Therefore, we're actually succumbing to these statutes. We're a very obedient group of people. That's very evident. I would say probably 75-80% of people are much happier letting somebody else run their lives than run their own, which is only natural, because basically, if everybody wanted to run their own life completely, you wouldn't have a society. You have to have a certain number of people that just want to get on with life. But you see, they're not letting those people get on with life. Like, they're saying all these crazy restrictions, most of which make absolutely no sense whatsoever, that I can sit on a restaurant terrace without a mask on, but if I get up and walk to the restaurant door, I've got to put the mask on. And these are insane sorts of rules with no science backing them up. If the masks work, you don't have a problem. You know, you're not going to get... I'm not going to be coughing and spluttering over people. I personally prefer to stay 2 meters away from anybody anyway. So I mean, this is, you know, let me see the figures, not the actual case figures. That's interesting, because the more people you actually test, the more cases you're going to find. Let me see the actual hospitalization figures, and base that also against the actual death figures, because right at this moment, or as of last night when I checked, the chances of dying of this is 128 people in 1 million will die from it. 128 out of a million. So that's a figure like 0.00128, if you want to get it precise, a percentage chance of dying from it. And for that, you don't close in the comedy down. So therefore, the next question I have asked since March is, well, if that's the case, why are we doing it?
Want to go live to the lines, 952-78-4000. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hiya, Ashley here in Benidorm. I just wanted to give you a quick call and just give a little bit of positivity about the situation. We're in Benidorm. We own a business of bar restaurants, which has mainly lived off British tourism for the last few years. And I just wanted to say that I keep getting sent conspiracy theories. So I've stopped watching the news. I'm just absolutely fed up of it. We decided we needed to get on with our life and try and move forward in the situation. And we are now having days, some days, busier than they were before. We've just took on another two members of staff. We now employ 9 people in our little small bar. And we're just making it work. We've adapted the best way we can. And it's not all negative. You know, I do feel that the negativity is somewhat dragging people back, you know.
Just a quick one, Ashley. Are you getting sort of the police coming in and checking up on you on a regular basis? Or how's it going for you there?
We've had 4 inspections since we opened. We opened as soon as we could. We've had an inspection from Sanidad, an inspection from the town hall, and 2 from the police. We're on one of the main roads in Benidorm. So people pass a lot, you know, the police pass a lot and so on. We work within the guidelines. There's social distancing in between all the tables. Yet we adapted. You know, all of the hotels in front of us are closed. So, you know, I realised I need to find people from further afield. I went onto social media, started doing blogs, expanding. We now have people turning up in taxis coming to eat and drink at our bar, you know, that never happened before. So there is some positivity out there. You know, it's not all doom and gloom. And all we can do is try and work in the situation the best we can. And that's all I wanted to say.
The other thing I was going to say, actually, before you go, and thanks very much for calling in. Your customers, are they fine with the new, and everybody will groan when I say these words, the new normal? They will adapt to the what you've had to put in?
Yeah, the only thing I would say is that sometimes I can't help but feel that some people don't understand the restrictions that we have to work in. For example, now, sometimes the people have to wait a little bit longer for the food because I'm not employing as many people as I did before, because I don't want to be caught out if we get locked down again by having lots of people on contract. But we still employ lots of people. Sometimes people have to wait a little bit longer for the food. We're very busy because we're one of the very few that have opened. But in general, the people are happy to abide by the rules. I mean, having to close at 10 o'clock like they are in the UK, I find that unbelievable. You know, if they let people stay out a couple of hours later like we do in Spain until 12, 1 o'clock, I think that's a fair enough time to say, right, it's time to go home. But shutting at 10 o'clock in the UK, meaning the streets are going to fill and it's only 10 o'clock, whereas here by 12, 1 o'clock, everyone's merry enough, everyone's had a few drinks and they're all ready for home anyway, you know?
If anybody's listening and wants to pop down, I'll give you a quick plug then, Ashley. What's your fine establishment called?
We're the Corner Bar in Benidorm, and we're doing just okay.
Okay, well, good to hear from you. Keep your chin out. A little bit of positivity in the morning. Thanks very much for your call in.
Yes, pal. Thank you. Bye.
That's Ashley from Benidorm having a call. We've got another caller on the line. I thought the phone lines might be a little bit busy. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, hi. This is Rupert calling from Marbella.
Morning, Rupert.
Hey. My viewpoint is that this whole situation is really spiralled out of control. We were told that these lockdowns and all these measures were to keep the NHS safe and to keep everything running. So they built all these Nightingale hospitals, which turned out to be a fantasy because none of them got used. The NHS coped perfectly. But now we're seeing rising infection rates, but not the deaths rising in correlation. And with people under 60 with no underlying health problems, there is a 0.0018 mortality rate, which makes it slightly more dangerous than the flu. Now, if anyone who is elderly or at risk or who has health issues wants to shelter in place and stay locked down, that's fine. But there was a study in 1982 carried out which linked unemployment index in the US with mortality rates. And for every 1% of unemployment, 40,000 people died. And that is at a time when the population was a lot lower than it is now. So if you work out people are projecting 30% unemployment in the US, that's 1.2 million people dead from the results of lockdown, and this is happening all over the world as a result of lockdown, the economic damage. The United Nations has predicted that millions of people in third world countries will die as a result of the economic ramifications. I think one of the things that the media is doing at the moment, which is censoring people who talk, so I don't know if you saw, but a German doctor got arrested at Speaker's Corner in Hyde Park at the weekend, which was an absolute disgrace. The US and the UK have got Assange. They're torturing him at the moment, according to the United Nations. And the media are making everyone terrified of something which, for your everyday person, I mean, the flu is far more dangerous to school children. So why their lives are being wrecked due to this, having to wear masks in school, and that, you know, they can't interact. This is what I would implore everyone, and the media is not covering, to look into the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab. He's the chairman and founder of the World Economic Forum, and he has talked about the Great Reset. They keep talking about the Great Reset and the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Bill Gates is very involved with this, and they have plans saying that this is never going back to how it was. Technology is going to change everything. We're going to have a lot more control, and I think this is something that I would implore everyone to look into: Klaus Schwab, the Great Reset, World Economic Forum, and Event 201, which they did, which was a simulation of a coronavirus attack 6 weeks before the first reported case. This is not being picked up by the media. There's censorship going on all over the place. And if we don't wake up soon, we're going to end up living in a technocratic dictatorship, which is being dictated to, involving vaccines control and limitations and freedom of speech. And what they're doing to Julian Assange is part of all of this. So, yeah, that's all I've got to say.
Rupert, thanks very much for that.
But one quick question there. Have your opinions changed since the start of this? Did you start off believing in what you're saying, or have your opinions changed as things have unfolded?
Yeah, well, listen, my parents are quite elderly now, and I have, you know, friends and relatives back in the UK who are older. I'm asthmatic myself, so I'm at risk. A lot of my friends, you know, have health issues like diabetes, you know, friends' children have diabetes and things. I was the first to say, when I looked at the exponential growth and mortality rates, which were modelled by Professor Niall Ferguson at Imperial College London, who I have to say receives tens of millions a year from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, who are at the heart of all this. I called everyone who wasn't taking it seriously and said, you have to take it seriously. I took it so seriously. But as the lockdown continued, and what I happened to see was, I'm just studying the data that's being published, not the study, the data that they pick and choose in the media to hype things up and terrify us. I look at the actual data. The CDC, Public Health England, is all being published. And I'll be honest with you, my whole opinion changed towards the end of the lockdown, that this whole thing was ridiculous and it's a sham.
Thank you very much for that. Right, that means we've come to the end of a very quick, it seems, Viewpoints. Back with more after the break.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe. Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Back for the second hour of Viewpoint. If you want to get involved with the show,
to contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Yes, indeed. Too many mice in the studio. I was looking at the one screen and clicking the other mouse on the other screen and wondering what was. I've only been doing this job for the past whatever years. Joined in the studio by John Harper and down the line by Alfred. I just want to go through a couple of the WhatsApps that we've had in this morning. This in from Cookie. Good morning to you. Vaccines need to be tested and clinical trials for 10 years before injecting into humans. Always read the contradictions and adjunctives. Be informed. There's a lot of conflicting info, as Fauci had come out and said, you cannot pass it on if you are symptomatic and you cannot catch from surfaces. It's confusing for everyone. Another one in here saying, it's not a conspiracy theory. Future failure, planet's life support system, is driving this global control virus just as a mechanism implementing and compliance. Richard's come back saying, right then, we really need to stop testing people that have symptoms. Assume you have it. Test those that are asymptomatic. That way the virus stops spreading as much. Flu vaccine efficiency in the UK, at least, is generally quite poor, under 20%. The British currently don't have a clue about full lockdown, mainly follow rules because the mustn't grumble notion of stiff upper lipness, but others are not. That's why we have a large increase in cases. Deaths are rising in correlation. The caller admits the concept of lag, and also another point in here saying, Heiko Schoenig, who was the founder of the anti-vaccination group Aufklärung, and I'm sure that Stephen Ritson will be able to put that better than I could. That's Doctors for Enlightenment. He got arrested for not wearing a mask and keeping social distancing, not for what he said. That was more disseminated misinformation from the caller. Talking of callers, morning caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Alf Joes. I dropped out.
Ah, you dropped out, Alf. All right. Well, sorry about that. Yeah, I did wonder. Alf, I'll call you back because I put you on the line. Otherwise, you won't be able to hear the other listeners who are calling in. So I'll give you a call back in a few seconds on that one. Yeah, I wondered where he'd gone. He dropped out. But there you go. If you wish to get involved with the show...
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And we're back again. You can leave us. You can leave a post on the Talk Radio Europe official page as well on Facebook. And good morning to Kenneth, who's listening in. Good to have you with us. Alf, any thoughts on what you've heard thus far from the court? Yep. Well, please, the floor is yours.
I'll just take it in the order of my notes. So on John's figures, the 128 or whatever it was, that means that the UK can look forward to losing only 8,200 more people. So they should just get on with it, get rid of the 8,200, and that'll be the end of the virus. And everybody knows that all of those statistics are based on what happened before and are based on somebody saying something. Spain have already admitted that for the first 2 months of the virus, they weren't testing properly. They don't know how many people died from the virus. And in the UK, it's acknowledged that doctors weren't writing that down on the death certificates. So I think you have to be careful. What is it? Statistics, lies and whatever. So just accept the fact, because this isn't a conspiracy. These people are dying in big numbers, a million in the world, and that's, everybody knows, that's an underestimate. So we should stop trying to quote things to say, oh, it's not as bad as what it looks. It is. But I will agree with Rupert, because Rupert was quite right, and lots of people have been saying it. When the virus first started, there was a danger that the hospitals were going to be overrun, and they didn't know, what was happening really, and they couldn't see the top of the first hump. So when they put the Nightingale ones in, and that, I don't knock them for that. It was there in case they didn't use it, and you could all argue it's a waste of money or whatever. But those things, there's a knowledge that those things can still be used in the future. But when we've set off, the idea of all these restrictions and the lockdown and everything was about making sure that the hospitals weren't being overrun. It wasn't even about the whole of the health service being overrun. It was just about the hospitals. Now, everybody can tell you, even with the rise in things, nobody is predicting, as John quite rightly says, I want to see the hospitalisation figures because they're still quite low. So the hospitals aren't being overrun.
Got a call coming in, Alf, if I can just interrupt you for a second there. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Giles, it's Peter.
Morning, Peter.
Good morning. Right, statistics. We keep getting these bits and pieces from different organisations, different governments, different people. this virus, whether it exists or not, we're paying a price for a modern Western debauched lifestyle. And this is not me just having a go. In Tennessee, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, one of the world's biggest, fastest computers, I think it's in the top five in the world, has been punched in with 2.5 billion different combinations on COVID-19. So we will not get better information than what this has come up with. And it's predicted everything that we're seeing within COVID. So it's what has been happening, the computer came up with exactly. And it took 10 days for this information, one of the fastest computers in the world, 2.5 billion different combinations. So I would say there is no one could be more accurate than this. And it's got to absolutely smack on. Now, I mentioned before, and some doctors have said, about a cytokine storm. Now, people like Rupert, there's a few people out there, are going to do their research. Go look up Brady-Kinnon's hypothesis, because it's not a cytokine storm. It's a Brady-Kinnon hypothesis. And basically what's happening is not a respiratory thing. It's a vascular thing. We're getting in, it's getting into the system, and it's making it impermeable, and you're literally drowning your own fluids. Now, the reason this virus gets in is ACE2 receptors. I've mentioned that in the past, and that's the pathway for the virus to get into the cell. Now, if you're overweight and you have high blood pressure and you're taking statins. What they are is ACE2 inhibitors. Now, if you are constantly on a certain drug, your body will try to find equanimity and balance. So when you take ACE2 inhibitors for a long period of time, your body will start to upgrade and make new ACE2 cells. The more ACE2 cells you have, the more portals you have for the virus to go into the cells. Now, this Brady-Kinnon hypothesis is basically the exact same symptoms times exponentially of taking these drugs, these statins. So in Africa at the moment, we're not talking about Africa. It's just not happening in Africa and places like Ethiopia, Nigeria. And these poor people who aren't on Western diets and aren't taking tons of tablets do not seem to be suffering. Now, people point out, oh, India and that. India have 1.something billion people, and it's the wealthy Indians that tend to be getting it. So what we're seeing now is this so-called virus is getting in and causing this Brady-Kinnon storm. And everybody who is on tablets, who is overweight, who doesn't exercise, take more than one or two tablets, is dying. So nobody is talking about this. This is flat. You cannot get more information than that. And other than people like Rupert South, who's doing...
Oh, hello. Sounds like Peter's been cut off in his prime there. I'm sure he'll call back John, and then I'll go out.
Yeah, okay. So Peter, very interesting stuff, and exactly...
I think we have him back.
I love lying. Good.
Just look at Peter, you're back.
Ah, good.
Yeah, that must have been Bill Gates on his finger on the trigger. That Peter's with.
But this is the point I'm making. Also, in this Brady-Kinnon hypothesis, what's happening is the vascular system is becoming impermeable. We're creating what's called a HYCLA, it's a hyaluronic acid, which you find in soaps, that can hold 1,000 times its own weight. And this is happening in the lungs. So you're drowning your own fluids. And putting you on a respirator is not working. So everything they're doing is wrong. All the reasons for it happening is wrong. And there is no need to inoculate against this or to give people an injection for this. There's just absolutely no need. Fit and healthy people are not at risk here. Now, I also, at the beginning, when I mentioned the R0 number of 4, we all knew this looked scary. But as the information has come in, as these computers are doing the number crunching, and as we're getting more and more advice, it's nowhere near as scary as we first believed. Absolutely no reason in a million years to shut down an economy. That's just crazy. And as people said, the knockback from that is 10 times worse, a million times worse. And as for figures, somebody said last week on the UK news, 50,000 cases a day. Well, I was out of school at 15, but 50,000 a day. Apparently 70 people per 100,000 die in the UK. So what's that, 700 a million, 60 million? So 50,000 a day, every day, solid for 3 years. Everybody would have it. 42,000 people would die. 14,000 a year. Most of those would have died anyway. So why on earth are we shutting down the economy? You don't have to be a conspiracy for this. You just have to look at the information. And the information is staring me right in the face. And I'm not a doctor. I'm not a college graduate. I'm not an epidemiologist. But you cannot argue with that information. It's there. And anybody wants to look it up, look it up. Because that is what's happening. And the world has been shut down, destroyed, economy shut down, people committing suicide, spousal abuse, locked into their homes, you name it. It's absolutely beyond me. And when people say conspiracy theory, you explain to me why this has happened. All this, what they're doing over this just... It's extraordinary. I can't get my head around
Peter,
it.
Peter, thanks. We've got some more calls coming in. Thanks very much. As always, points passionately made. I've got another caller coming in, 952-78-4000. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, boys. I'm so glad to hear you're all back. This is Marlene in Calpe.
Good morning to you, Marlene.
I hope you're all well. Yep. Yes?
Well, John I can't look at Alf, he's down the end of the phone line, but John looks in rude health.
That sounds as if he's been drinking too much.
I'm going to say rude health. But anyway, what's your viewpoint, Marlene?
Look, the thing is, I can only say from the beginning of this, in South Yorkshire, and I've spent a lot of time in Derbyshire. Now, in our place where we live, there's a village called Eam in Derbyshire, which during the Black they closed themselves down, and they practically saved themselves from the rest of the world and the country. Yes? Now, this is part of my, you know, upbringing that you know. And when I heard about this thing coming, you know, this virus, I thought, oh, it reminded me of it. And so I personally went and made myself a mask. I then said to my husband, I'm going to not go out unless I see what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. And so bit by bit, I didn't go out because in the beginning, they were very, very, very serious here. You can't go out. And I said, okay, I don't want to. I want to know what's happening. So I abided by it. I stayed in for 9 weeks. Fortunately, I'm living in a place which is rather nice. So that's good. And... Then, of course, the rulings of you can't do this, only one person in the car and whatever it is. It was wonderful when I first could go to the supermarket. But I had to accept those rules. But in the beginning, it was my decision. I don't think anything about what the government said or anything. It was my decision. And I'm looking at it. Yes, and it is and to be here in Calpe, we went on Saturday, this last Saturday, to the beach, well, not on the beach, we just walked on the promenade.
Yeah.
Everything was open. There were quite a few people. Everybody was calm. It was nice. It was a lovely day.
Right.
On the beach, everybody was sort of separated. We seemed to be all happy. And everything was open, and people were walking and walking their dogs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they said, what a lovely, lovely day. So the only difference was, it was like being in a normal life. Only we were wearing masks.
Okay. Marlene,
okay.
Thank you for
that's
your call. Thank you for...
All the best to all of
thank you.
Thank
you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, good to hear from you as always, Marlene. Let's go to some of the... let's go to some of the WhatsApps, and I'll take a break, and then we'll come back to Alf just in 1 second. So, Mark says, statins were for cholesterol, not for high blood pressure. If the theories are to be believed, his theories are to be believed, Trump will walk it. That's Peter's theories. And here we go. Wow, how come Peter has all this knowledge and surety of what to do whilst the entirety of the medical profession and health authorities don't seem to have it? Erjam quarantined itself not to spread the plague. No, Erjam quarantined itself not to spread the plague, not to save itself. Its death rate was far higher than the rest of the country. If you want to get in contact with us...
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And I'll be back with Alf Brewer after this.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
And we're back, 952-78-4000. Alf.
Yeah, I'd like to go back a bit to this. The issue about people trying to control us and all that. So, yeah, I agree with Jason. I'm one of those. I don't want to be controlled like John. I want to make my own decisions. Unfortunately, though, you have to put it into the context of the life we live in. And, John, with the best will in the world, saying, run the lives within the constraints of the law. Who makes the law? At the moment in the UK, it's the Tories. In Spain, it's this consortium. But it's the government that are making the laws. So whatever you attempt to do, you're always going to be partly controlled by the government, whatever we think of it, however we want to do it. So what I always question is, the Tory government, for example, are setting these, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. They're having a debate in Parliament this afternoon because even their own MPs are questioning, why are you doing these things without us being involved? Because it's the Tory government, not the Tory party, that are making the decisions. And the difficulty is it's because we don't stop them. He's arrogant enough to say, 80-odd seats, I will just plough on, and whoever you want to involve in that, all the hangers-on at the back and all that, all his so-called advisers, I don't know what he's doing. The second thing is, one of the issues about going into the lockdown, seriously, we all talk about it, but none of us are certain about how much mental damage is done of people. But I was having a conversation with my mum on Sunday, and she came out with the strangest thing. My mum is 89, and she said, we had another person jumped off the bridge the other day. So what do you mean another person jumped off the bridge? Well, near where she lives is a disused railway line with a bridge, and mainly women, but she says it's the second one in a month, and we've had about 10 since Christmas. These are people committing, who knows? It's never happened before. My mum's never noticed it before, but they sit out, she sits in her front porch and her neighbour sits on the other side of the drive, and they watch the helicopters coming in to pick the bodies up or do whatever they're doing. If that is happening, why don't we hear about these things? Why is it just a generalised, the mental health issues with lockdown or staying indoors or whatever? My mum hasn't left her property since March the 16th. And she's got no intention. She is frightened to death. She's not going to leave her property. She doesn't even go out of her front door because she's frightened of it. My brother, occasionally, he visits every day, but quite often he stands in the kitchen while my mum's in the lounge, or if he goes into the lounge, he's at the other end of the lounge. Everybody is absolutely frightened. And the mental stuff, because I talk to my mum and she's saying, it's getting like this, it's getting like that. She used to go out 2-3 times a week, now nothing, sits indoors. And the last thing was what Peter said, because I love Peter when he starts to tell us. Unfortunately, this isn't about the survival of the fittest. It's not about that, because that's not what society, certainly in the UK, Spain, Western Europe, none of us believe in survival of the fittest. Otherwise, you would just, you'd cull off all the, we believe in euthanasia and stuff like that, and I don't. So, when you talk about, and quite right, somebody says statins just lower the cholesterol. But if it's a multiplicity, I take a thing called Eliquis because I've got arrhythmia, which is an unbalanced heartbeat. I'm not going to die from it, but if I don't take the medication, it doesn't control the arrhythmia. If I don't take my statins that lowers the cholesterol, it affects my lungs. And so it is a lung disorder, but it's quite right, it's vascular, whatever this is vascular. But if I don't have my lungs controlled, I don't get the air that my heart requires in the right way because of the arrhythmia. It just goes on and on and on. So with the best will in the world, Peter, you're right with all this, be fit, don't be overweight, don't be obese, don't do this, don't do that. That's not how the world works.
Good.
And it's not about saying to those who can't cope, well, sorry, you fall on yourself.
Got a caller on the line. Thank you for holding. 952-78-4000. Good morning, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello there. It's John Mabea.
Good morning, John.
Good morning to you. I think people should listen to all the propaganda and then make their own mind up. But remember, there is no such thing as absolute. in the past, you've had so many tragedies where absolutely safe, absolutely this, absolutely that. There is no such thing as absolute. Can I ask another quick question?
Okay, you will ask away, John.
British passports.
Yes.
Has it been decided yet that once you leave the EU, you've got to apply for a British passport?
Right, hang on. If that's, you've confused, the withdrawal agreement says that the UK will leave the EU on the 31st of December, right?
Correct, yeah.
When you get your passport renewed, yeah, you'll get a new sort of British passport, yeah, which won't say EU on the front of it. So right. you don't have to renew your passport before December. That's your passport, yeah?
Yeah, so you can come into a European country with your existing passport, EU passport.
Yeah, if you could, basically, your passport will still be valid. Yeah, absolutely.
As long as it's valid. Okay, thank you very much indeed.
No problem at all there. 952-78-4000. Let's go to a few bits and pieces that have come up. Richard, there is no such thing as absolute. Has he never drunk vodka? Thank you very much indeed for that one. Hey, other brands are available. It's good to have a sense of humour here in the future. It's a bit like being back at school, having live guests in Viewpoint. This just in from another WhatsApper. If that isn't a collective noun, that's about the Iron Plague, the Village of the Damned. About 260 people died from bubonic plague in the remote Derbyshire village of Eam. That's on the BBC, mind you, so that is obviously mainstream media, and that's propaganda, as John referred to it earlier. If you want to get in touch with the show,
to contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000, email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And we're going to go to John here. John.
Hello there. Yeah, right. Coming back on what Alf just said there with Boris's 80-seat majority,
yeah.
He may have an 80-seat majority, but still the infrastructure that surrounds Parliament is still very much a European-based one. It's quite natural after 40 years of European Union. So, therefore, the infrastructure he's got around him think one way. He thinks a second way, and the people think a third way. Now, the people thought enough of Boris's think that they decided to give him this stonking majority. He obviously can govern like that, but he can't govern like that until the magic date, December the 31st, because after that date, once the UK is out of the European Union for sure and has its sovereignty back and its independence and its ability to run its own laws...
And gives Kent to the French.
And give Kent to the French, why not? why would they give Kent to the French?
Because of the whole thing with the hard border that you have to put in.
Well, I mean, look, listen, when we're getting back onto Brexit talk now, but let's just see how that actually happens out, because the French are going to want the Channel ports working a lot more than we do, because they bring in a lot more than we take out. And so, therefore, whilst there's a trade imbalance, it will only hurt the French if they actually block the border ports at all. So that's really up to them. But coming back to Boris, once he's got rid of the European Union, and presuming and presumpting, hoping that Trump gets actually in on the 3rd of November, and more importantly, after he's been inaugurated on the 20th of January, then the political situation in the US-UK will have changed dramatically. And those remnants of people who hoped to go for this socialist utopia of the European Union or the socialist utopia of America will realise that they're stuffed. And they've got absolutely no chance of achieving that in the next 4 years. And the real work of cleaning this thing up can begin. And it will begin. It will begin sometime probably about March of next year. You'll see a massive amount of changes will have happened between not just England and America, but also the EU as it tries to reconcile itself to the fact that 16.1, nearly 17% of its GDP has just disappeared out the window.
As I thought we might do, we've got a couple of calls in on this one. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Alpha, I'll come to you in a minute. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Kate Costa-Blanco.
Good morning, Kate.
Morning. I'm just amazed that anyone thinks that it's going to be a walkover for Trump. And two, Trump has been distancing himself from the current government of the United Kingdom in the election year. He doesn't want to alienate the Irish American voters, neither does the Democrats. This is going to be, and at the moment, the British government is actually proposing illegal behaviour of breaking international law. You wouldn't want friends like that, would you? Cheers.
Well, I think they do want things like that, Kate. They just realise that sometimes, in actual fact, there's a big debate going on how illegal it would be to break it and who broke it first and what areas of the EU don't conform to international law when it suits them. But that's a whole different ballgame. I think Trump will get in for the very simple reason that I watched the amount of people that are supporting him and the amount of people that are not supporting Sleepy Joe. And we already know, because the Democrats have declared it, that if they don't get the result they want, that there's going to be riots and demonstrations and they're going to burn the place down.
They don't say they're going to burn the place down.
They have.
This is traditional John. I'm so glad after all these months that you come along with this stuff. First of all, because you're anti-EU, you have this great development in your brain that all of a sudden the EU runs everything in the UK. And you said, when he gets control, when the infrastructure... Well, if you understand British politics, and if you understand the British Parliament, if you understand the decision-making in Britain, and I say Britain, not the four countries, you know, and Boris's 80-seat majority, is the infrastructure is the civil service. Why do you think Johnson and his oppos have gone through all the stages of getting rid of the chief of the civil service, changing out department heads, doing all? Because he needs a civil service that are going to do what he asks them to do.
At the moment, they're not doing
what the EU want. They're doing what they think is best for Britain, coming from a different direction. It's got nothing to do with the EU. So you cannot say it when he gets control. He has control. He's had control for a long time now. What they've, you know, this pandemic has got in the way of it, but, you know, so he doesn't have to wait until after December the 31st, and he can't govern in a different way after the 31st. He will find it more difficult because Parliament and people who are representing the UK all over the show will start to put more pressure on him, because he'll start to understand Europe was a leveller for the United Kingdom for many years. And you should also stop, John, saying silly things like this socialist utopia that people wanted. I will remind you, 1970 to 1976, Tory party negotiations with the old EEC in order to join the EEC was conducted by the Tories. We signed up to join the EEC under a Tory banner, not under Labour. Most Labour MPs voted against. I am not like them. I wasn't part of the Benite gang. I did agree with going into Europe, but you can't keep saying this socialist utopia. Most of what you're talking about has come about because of other countries like Spain, like Italy, attempting to say to France and Germany, you're not running Europe on your own. Mm-hmm. So stop with the nonsense.
Got a caller on the line now, if I may, just going straight to the caller. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Oh, hi, it's Rupert again.
Hello, Rupert again.
Hey, just one quick point, which Kate from Costa Blanca just mentioned, that the UK are behaving in a certain way, which, yeah, again, is pretty distasteful. But unfortunately, this is what happens in negotiations, in business, in life. You know, this is just just one of, you know, people use these tactics every day, unfortunately, if you want to get the deal. But I just think that people seem to just read the media and that's the narrative, which, again, I find is distasteful. But I think if anyone would care to look at the EU's track record over the decades, they will see that the EU are guilty, because obviously they're the largest trading bloc in the world, of breaking treaties and doing exactly what they accuse the UK of doing now. But unfortunately, our biased media doesn't cover this. So that's all I want to say. Thanks.
Thank you very much for that. Going to take a short break and then back for the final 20 minutes of this morning's Viewpoint.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And we're back into the last, blimey, 18 minutes or so of Viewpoint. Doesn't the world fly by when you're having fun? Let's go to the WhatsApps first. Just a quick breaking news story. Stormont's First Minister Arlene Forster has announced the introduction of an 11pm curfew for the hospitality sector in Northern Ireland. Remarks come back. Here, Rupert. There you go. And some facts and figures. Right, approval ratings. Keir Starmer, well, 46%. Badly, 26%. Net, +20%. Boris Johnson, well, 35%. Badly, 57%. That's down 22%. That's via YouGov on the 28th of September. Trump will get in because he relies on the poorly educated. Steady. The UK has always had control. Just like it's always had control to chuck out EU nationals that didn't fulfil immigration criteria. Alf is right. In fact, Britain actually left trade free area, the EFTA, to join the EEC, as it was then. So free trade could hardly have been the only motivation. EU is not a caller. This also, direct quote, thank you. That is the direct quote. Looking at also some charts, and this one's in US presidential election, though I'm not sure who it's from. Puts Joe Biden at 56 and Donald Trump at 43. There is a debate, of course, happening tonight stroke tomorrow, which will be interesting to see how that one pans out as well. And this one coming in as well. Harper playing fast and loose with statistics again. EU exports to the UK amounts to 2% of GDP. Almost as good as his claim that a few months ago that Brits accounted for 41% of the British economy. I don't remember that one. This one in from Lisa. Thank you very much. That's Betfair odds, by the way, on the voting. Thank you very much, Richard. Lisa comes in saying, glad that Marlene glad Marlene is well, but the reality for many is in business is bad. Mine has dropped 50%, 2 months of lockdown and no income. I'm having to move from my apartment as I won't be able to continue with the costs. We are surviving, but not much more than that. That is from Lisa in Mallorca. I'll come to Alf first. Alf, your thoughts on what we've heard thus far?
Yeah. I've got some diary messages, actually, first, because this is about the time of the year when we start talking about how many shopping days are left. So there are 35...
You mean Amazon delivery days, basically, at the moment?
There are 35 shopping days left to the next 4 years. That's awesome. There are 75 shopping days left until they cancel Christmas.
Right.
There's 150 shopping days left until they decide that you might have to carry on wearing a mask. And there's about 300 days left to when they tell us that they probably might find a vaccine. You know, the guy who came on earlier, Peter Pitt, and he was talking about, what was it, 6 to 10 years in normal circumstances, and they're going to try and do all that in 6 to 10 months.
Right.
Absolute arrant nonsense.
Just a quick one. I've got some breaking news, sorry, coming in from Spain. Okay. Excuse me, Alf. Okay. Just as the Confederation of Spanish Industry has reached an agreement between the syndicates and the government to prolong the ERTE until the 31st of January. That's just coming in from El País in Spanish. That's some interesting Spanish news. So they'll be keeping the ERTE. You know that one, John. You're looking at me confused. The ERTE, where you get your wage. Percentage of your wage, furlough,
right.
If
right.
you like.
A wage, yes, I remember those.
Yeah. So that's just coming in that one, Alf. Just... Sorry, you were saying that, but that just flashed up on my screen, excuse me.
Anyway,
Trump will definitely get in, not because of some waiver thing, but I don't see, in my political view of what's going on in America, I really don't see any great drive, you know, in amongst all this Black Lives Matters and the fires and everything. I still don't see any great drive for change in America. So I honestly don't. And the Trump lies don't matter. I was watching an interesting program the night before last and last night where they continue. When I was doing my political stuff, one of the things, and I'm talking about before I worked for the Labour Party, one of the things that you learn very quickly is in order to get a message over, you have to say it seven times. And after the seventh time, people have just started to get the message and you can get away with it. And that's the same with Trump's lies. If you lie often and consistently enough, the lies become the truth. So nobody in America takes, you know, from what I can see, he got elected last time on lies. Take his tax, for example, and they're regurgitating the same stuff about him not paying tax. They did it 4 years ago and it didn't work, and they're doing it now, and people are going to go, oh, we've had all this before. You know, you have to understand how the electorate works. I can't see. It's not about Sleepy Joe, and we shouldn't knock people who are attempting to put alternatives. But I don't see that there is an alternative to what Trump's saying in any genuine sense of the word drive. Where's the passionate drive to change what's happening in America? And I don't see it.
I think you've got the passionate drive from the Democrats to change things in America. I can see that very clearly. And I think that if
I'm
you
talking
actually...
about changing the president, John. I'm not talking about changing society. That's a bit bigger question.
Well, I mean, they're looking at changing the president, but you've only got to look at the way the states actually break down. You've now got these nice red maps and blue maps to show the areas, and basically the blue guys have got the east coast and the west coast, and the red goats have got the rest in the middle. And it just seems like, I mean, even Charles is wearing a Make America
Did you
Great
say
t-shirt.
The red goats, by the
red
way.
Red guys.
The red goats.
Almost said red coats, didn't
let's
I?
Go, I'm wearing this t-shirt because a friend went to Washington, D.C.
You're a closet Trumpist.
And on the back of it, it actually says Made in Honduras, which I find hysterical.
What I got as a gift.
Exactly. Right then, let's go over to the lines. Thank you, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Sharon Alley County.
Good morning, Sharon.
Morning, everybody. Hi. Hi, John. Don't forget, John, that a lot of the Scandinavian countries are run on a socialist agenda, and they're some of the happiest countries in the world. And it is their choice and their vote, so you can't sort of criticise their own sovereign vote. Secondly, to Rupert, a lot of the Brexiteers were not happy about the breaking of the international law. And thirdly, don't forget that Johnson himself was a firm Remainer in 2016, and he dithered right up until the 2013, and he dithered right up until the referendum in 2016. So you have to question why Johnson suddenly changed tack. And I suspect he knew that a lot of Brexiteers, they could short the pound and make loads of money on it, and so he suddenly realised he could become a nice rich man because he's got lots of adult children still sponging off him, wanting money from him. And I think that's probably why he changed. I would like to ask why John was allowed to change subject, Giles, because I do wonder whether it was, we were talking about COVID and he suddenly diverts to Brexit. Was it because he doesn't want to admit that he disagrees with Johnson on the way he's handling COVID? So therefore the easiest option for John was to change the subject.
Not really, Sharon. I mean, first off...
Well, you did change the subject and I was very interested. Well, I actually had something to say on COVID.
It just sort of happened. But I don't know how it happened, actually, but we just did. I think
no,
Giles.
I don't
said,
either.
No, but I think the fact is, I'll agree with you on Boris. I mean, Johnson is somebody who represents Johnson, and he actually only really has his own interest at heart, I suspect.
Yes.
And when he actually saw the way the wind was going, he switched horses because he could see the opportunity to be a prime minister, which I'm sure he regrets ever doing now, and he could see the case of getting in power, and then suddenly he finds himself stonking in power with an 80-seat majority. But he still does. I mean, yes, he did support the Remain side quite a lot, And so therefore, you can really say at heart is probably he probably is somebody that believes in the European identity and concept, and of course which we all live in anyway. So we're stuck with it whether we like it or not, or we don't. We can always leave, of course. But I mean, I think that you can't trust what any politician's going to do. I think what you are seeing is you see
jaded worldview, Mr. Harper.
You've seen a couple of interesting things at the moment. You've got two new parties that are saying they're going to release. One is the, what is it, the, can't think of what it is, the Jamie Foxx's, whatever his name is, Foxx's party, Reprise or something.
In the UK?
Yeah. He just announced he's going to start a new party.
Oh, the son of the actor? Him, right, OK.
That'll help us. OK, anyway, thanks a lot.
Thanks for that. Okay. Just going to come back to some stuff coming in. Alf will be with you in a second. This is from Jeff in Torrevieja. 2 points, Giles. One, in our barrio del Chaparral in Torrevieja, we have been wearing masks. Thank you. Wearing masks voluntarily since the beginning of lockdown. You could not enter your local shop or supermarket without face covering. Forget the complicated algorithms and statistics as described by Peter, because ethologist John B. Callon, around about 1962, concluded after study of Norwegian rats, with unlimited supplies that you would end up with a society that had an elite dominating the other underprivileged, living in third world conditions. QED, it's survival of the fittest. It is Lawrence Fox, not Jamie Fox. Jamie Fox is the actor, of course. Who any given Sunday? It's Lawrence Fox, his new thing. Cookie's coming with masks do not work. Thank you, Cookie. Boris Johnson sat on the face and saw which one had traction. That's another one saying it's Lawrence Fox, not Jamie Fox, who played in the film, who played Ray in the film. Anyway, let's go the singer. And I've now forgotten my soul singers. I'll be back in a minute. Anyway, Alf, save me. Come on, Alf, say something.
You know, I was interested in a bit about Scandinavian countries are more socialist, and they've been going that way for many years. Also, the Eastern Bloc countries were anti-communism, are moving more towards, you know, democracy. They will become more socialist, I'm certain of it. And on top of that, you know, Sweden has got the highest percentage of trade union members of any country in Europe. And now I find that fascinating how you can... And I visited Norway, and very much so, the ministers come into the... I went to a trade union conference, and the government were part of what was going on. That was a telecom conference. What I also found interesting is, you know, the sadness of Boris. Boris is finding it difficult to survive on his finances since he lost his £275,000 from his newspaper column. So he's now bleating on because, as quite rightly Sharon said, he's got all these people, you know, sponging money off of him, and he doesn't get enough money as the Prime Minister to keep up this level of thing. I don't know what John's talking about, the two new parties. Whatever comes along, you know, unless it's going to be an anti-Brexit, you know, so you're going to have the opposite of the UKIP party or whatever, I can't see anything coming along other than some fringe organisation talking about fringe things
Alf, we've got an anti-Brexit party in the Lib Dems, so they're not going anywhere, that's for sure.
But they're not new, John, and they're not
you're not going to find a new lot that are going to go after the Remain position because it's patently lost.
New party. You said there's two new parties starting up. You know, it's no different. I would imagine that every general election in the UK, there are at least five new parties.
Indeed.
Set up.
Want to go live to the lights again? Sorry, after this interruption. Good morning, Cully. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Charles, Peter again.
Yes, Peter.
Yes. Alf often complains of being misquoted, and he speaks of Trump's lies. Survival of the fittest, I didn't say, and I didn't even suggest, so I don't know where he got that from.
That wasn't Alf, that was from a WhatsApp, by the way, I think, yeah?
Well, whoever it was. But my point is ever from the 50s and 60s, we've been inundated by governments and by large industries We've started eating junk food. We've had government information telling us that we should eat low-fat diets and high-grain diets. Long story short, we've had information for years now that has created a sick, elderly population. And I'm not having a go at them. What I'm saying is that this has been forced upon them, and they don't. Many of them are trying to do the best thing, eat low-fat diets and try and take a bit of exercise. But the information they get is bad. They're being constantly put on more and more tablets, as Alf just said.
Yeah.
And many of that he could get off of if he was prepared to look up the information and have a go at it. But this has created this problem that we're in. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Right.
Not the fact that survival of the fittest. It's that we've been lied to, and we're all getting older and sicker and more reliant, and many people are trapped by their health.
Peter, thank you.
Quick other point for Sharon, the Coutts Bank and other big major banks at the moment, I mentioned Coutts because it was mentioned last week,
yep,
have made a massive bet. We will make a deal with the European Union and the pound will rocket. So she was talking about hedging against the
thank
pound.
You, Peter.
It's going to go the other way now.
Thank you so much for calling. I'll just squeeze another caller in. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yes, morning, Giles. It's Gary here.
Morning, Gary.
With regards to the COVID virus, cutting across all the politics, isn't this just a mere reflection on the selfishness of society in general? Some people were trying their best and others just couldn't care less and just thinking of themselves. And with regards to Boris Johnson, I think he's the best thing because he's the only person getting me through this, because every time I see him on the TV, he just cheers me up.
That's
bye-bye. Well,
thank you very much for that point. Right, into the last 2 minutes, believe it or not, of viewpoint. Where does the time go? I ask myself, Alf, let's have some final thoughts.
Well, I'm glad that Gary likes to see Boris Johnson come on. He said he just cheers me up.
Yeah.
Are you certain he's not making you laugh, Gary? Because some of the things he comes out with are just astonishing, to say the least. But I think, yeah, we are going to all have to knuckle down. We're going to have to keep it up. I don't believe in the conspiracy theory, but I do think that what they're doing with the levelling down of things and putting people, you know, stay indoors and all that, I just think it is a bit over the top and it needs to be handled differently. Some of it is just nonsense. Like the woman said, I can go into a bar with 3 or 4 other people from different households, but I can't go into my next door neighbour's house.
Mm, indeed.
Nonsense.
Alf, always good to have you with us. A quick couple of WhatsApps. Here's a tip. Boris Johnson crying about being poor is hilarious. Given that he lives rent free. And also, is that the same Coutts owned by the UK government taking a bet on themselves? Thanks very much for the WhatsApps there. John, your final thoughts. We've got a minute left.
Final thoughts is, hey, very nice to be back and good to actually stir things up again. And let's keep it stirring, because viewpoint, that's what it's all about. Your viewpoint out to the people.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Kenny. And obviously, we'll be watching the debate tonight in the States, I should imagine.
I get a bed at 3 o'clock because I watch Trump every night just to actually see what new thing he's putting in there to stir up the Democrats.
Looking forward to that. Alf, what's your preferred bedtime watching?
Much the same as John, actually. I watch the news and I watch the political stuff, and Trump is always good he's the one who can make you have a smile on your face.
Indeed.
When you go to bed.
You see, there you go. So there you go. Boris Johnson putting smiles on people's faces, and Trump putting smiles on people's faces. This has been an excellent viewpoint. Always my thanks to my guest, Alf Brewer.
Thank you, Giles. Thank you, John.
And good to have John Harper with us and in the studio again.
Yeah, good to be around, Alf, and thanks for being here with us.
And right then, so this show will be repeated. Thank you very much, listeners, for all your messages and your viewpoints in. This show will be repeated at 6 o'clock. Stephen Ritson is up next.
Expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.